Will I ever be good enough? Healing the Daughters of Narcissistic Mothers by Carol McBride, Ph.D. Narrated by Carol McBride. Copyright 2008 by Dr. Carol McBride. This unabridged audiobook is published by arrangement with Dr. Carol McBride, care of Susan Schulman Agency, and was produced in the year 2011 by Tantor Media Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. Author's note. The examples, anecdotes, and characters in this book are drawn from my clinical work, research, and life experiences with real people and events. Names and some identifying features and details have been changed, and in some instances, people or situations are composites. Introduction. Our relationship with mother is birthed simultaneously with our entry into the world. We take our first breath of life and display the initial dependent human longing for protection and love in her presence. We are as one in the womb and on the birthing table. This woman, our mother, all that she is and is not, has given us life. Our connection with her in this instant and from this point forward carries with it tremendous psychological weight for our lifelong well-being. Oddly, I have never wanted to believe this. First, being a feminist-era mom myself, I didn't want mothers and women to bear so much responsibility or ultimate blame if things go wrong. Certainly, many factors other than mothering shape a child's life. Second, I didn't want to face how feeling like an unmothered child had such a devastating effect on me and my life. To acknowledge this meant I had to face it. While doing research over the years, I have read many books that discuss the mother-daughter bond. Each time I read a different volume, unexpected tears would stream down my cheeks. For I could not recall attachment, closeness, memories of the scent of mother's perfume, the feel of her skin, the sound of her voice singing in the kitchen, the solace of her rocking, holding, and comforting, the intellectual stimulation and joy of being read to. I knew this was not natural, but could not find a book that explained this lack. It made me feel somewhat crazy. Was I delusional? Or just a chick with a poor memory? I could not find a book that explained that this phenomenon of feeling unmothered could be a real deal, and that there could be mothers who are not maternal. Nor could I find a book that discussed the conflicted feelings that their daughters have about these mothers, the frustrated love, and even sometimes the hatred. Because good girls aren't supposed to hate their mothers, they don't talk about these bad feelings. Motherhood is a sacred institution in most cultures, and therefore is generally not discussed in a negative light. When I decided to write a book on mothers who don't mother their daughters, and the pain this causes girls and adult daughters, I felt as if I were breaking a taboo. Reading books about the mother-daughter bond always gave me the sensation of a deep loss and the fear that I was alone in this suffering. Experts wrote of the complexity of the mother-daughter connection, how it is rife with conflict and ambivalence, but I felt something different, a void, a lack of empathy and interest, and a lack of feeling loved. For many years, I did not understand and tried to rationalize it. Other members of the family and well-intentioned therapists explained it away with various excuses. Like a good girl, I tried to make excuses and take all the blame. It was not until I began to understand that the emotional void was a characteristic result of maternal narcissism that the pieces began to fit together. The more I learned about maternal narcissism, the more my experience, my sadness, and my lack of memory made sense. This understanding was the key to my beginning to recover my own sense of identity, apart from my mother. I became more centered, taking up what I now call substantial space, no longer invisible even to myself, and not having to make myself up as I go along. Without understanding, we flail around, we make mistakes, feel deep unworthiness, and sabotage ourselves and our lives. Writing this book has been a culmination of years of research and a soul journey that took me back to when I was a little girl who knew something was wrong, feeling that the absence of nurturing was not normal, but not knowing why. I am writing this book now in the hopes that I can help other women understand that those feelings were and are not their fault. This does not mean that I want you to blame your mother. This is not a journey of projected anger, resentment, or rage, but one of understanding. We want to heal ourselves, and we have to do that with love and forgiveness for ourselves and our mothers. I do not believe in creating victims. We are accountable for our own lives and feelings. To be healthy, we first have to understand what we experienced as daughters of narcissistic mothers, and then we can move forward in recovery to make things the way they need to be for us. Without understanding our mothers and what their narcissism did to us, it is impossible to recover. We have been taught to repress and deny, but we have to face the truth of our experiences, that our longing for maternal warmth and mothering is not going to be fulfilled, and our wishing and hoping that things will be different are not going to change things. As girls, we were programmed to look at the dynamics of the family in a positive light, even though we knew we lived under a shadow. Our families usually did look good to outsiders, but though we sensed something was wrong, we were told that really, it is nothing. This kind of emotional environment and dishonesty can be crazy-making. Smile, be pretty, and act like everything's good. Sound familiar? I am still amazed whenever I talk to other daughters of narcissistic mothers at the similarities of our internal emotional landscapes. We may have different lifestyles and outward appearances for the world to see, but inside we wave the same emotional banners. My greatest hope is that this book will offer you acknowledgement and validation for your profound emotions and allow you to feel whole, healthy, and authentic in who you are today. In writing this book, I had to fight many internal battles. First, I had to trust my ability to do it, as I am a therapist, not a writer. Second, and of more interest, I had to talk to my mother about it. When I brought it up with Mother, I said to her, "Hey, Mom, I need your help. I am writing a book about mothers and daughters, and I need your input, suggestions, and permission to use some personal material." My mother, bless her heart, said, "Why don't you write a book about fathers?" And of course, she was worried about being a bad mother, which would be expected. She was able to give me her blessing, however, and I think it is because she was trying to understand that this is not a book about blame, but a book about healing. I have to admit, I wanted her to say many things like, "Are there some things we need to discuss or work on together? Do you have pain from your childhood? Is there anything we can do about it now? Can we heal together?" None of this happened, but after all these years of my own recovery work, I knew not to expect her to be able to do this empathic inquiry. I was grateful that I had mustered the nerve to broach the book to her, which admittedly took me some time to do. At one time in my life, this exchange would have been unthinkable. Somehow, after taking this risk, I found it easier to move forward and be authentic in talking about my own experience as well as about my research. Although it would have felt emotionally safe to write at arm's length from a purely clinical perspective. I hope that my own stories of being a daughter of a narcissistic mother will help you know that I do understand. I have been there. I've divided the book into three parts that parallel my approach to psychotherapy. Part 1 explains the problem of maternal narcissism. Part 2 shows the impact of the problem, its many effects, and how it plays out in daughters' lifestyles. Part 3 is a roadmap for recovery. I invite you now to come with me to learn about yourself and your mother. It won't always be a comfortable and easy trip. You'll be emerging from denial, confronting difficult feelings, being vulnerable, and facing characteristics of your own that you may not like. It is an emotional undertaking. Sometimes you will find it funny. Other times you will feel a great sadness as you try to understand what you experienced and heal from it. By doing so, you will change the legacy of distorted maternal love and make a lasting difference for your daughters, sons, and grandchildren. As you face the honest reflections of your life patterns, you will ultimately like yourself more and become better at parenting, in relationships, and in everything else in your life. Emotional legacies are like genetic legacies. They pass along to each generation without anyone really taking a lot of notice. Some of the hand-me-downs are endearing and wonderful, and we feel grateful and proud. But some are heartbreaking and destructive. They need to be stopped. We need to stop them. Having done my own recovery work from my distorted maternal legacy, I can say that I've been there, and I can help you change yours too. I welcome you to listen further with me. Sit with me, talk with me, cry with me, laugh with me. Together, we will begin to deal with the reality of your emotional legacy. Even if it's always been all about Mom, it's your turn now. It gets to be about you. The you that maybe you've never discovered or didn't even know existed. Part 1. Recognizing the Problem. Chapter 1. The Emotional Burden You Carry. There was a little girl who had a little curl right in the middle of her forehead. And when she was good, she was criticized anyway. Alon Galam, PhD, Trapped in the Mirror. For many years, wherever I went, I was accompanied by a gang of harsh critics who made my life almost unbearable. No matter what I tried to accomplish, they were always there reminding me that I wasn't up to the task and could never do a good enough job. If I was in the midst of spring cleaning or working hard on a home improvement project, they screamed at me, "This house will never be what you want it to be." While I was exercising, they would nag, "It doesn't matter how hard you try. Your body is falling apart and you're a wimp. Can't you lift more weights than that?" I'd make financial decisions and they would bark at me, "You were always a moron at math and now you're a mess at finances." My internal critics were particularly nasty when it came to my relationships with men, whispering things like, "Can't you see you're a loser? You always pick the wrong men. Why don't you just give up?" And most hurtful of all, when I was having problems with my children, they would stridently announce, "Your life choices have harmed your children. You should be ashamed of yourself." These incessantly disapproving voices never gave me a moment's peace. They harangued, nagged, and demeaned me with the overall message that no matter how hard I tried, I could never succeed, could never be good enough. They created such an extreme sensitivity in me that I constantly assumed others were judging me as critically as I was judging myself. Finally, I realized that these critics were destroying me emotionally and I made a decision to annihilate them. It was a question of my very survival. Fortunately, my decision led to my recovery, as well as my research, clinical work, and the writing of this book. After I decided that the inner critics had to go, my first order of business was to figure out where they had originated. As a psychotherapist, I figured they were probably connected to my family history, but my background didn't seem problematic. My family touted a sturdy Dutch, German, Norwegian, and Swedish heritage with a solid work ethic, with no overly mean personalities or apparent child abuse. My self-protecting denial reminded me that I had grown up with a roof over my head, clothes to wear, food to eat. So what was my problem? I promised myself I would find out. Why am I so unsure of myself? For 28 years, I had conducted psychotherapy with hundreds of women and families, which provided me with clinical experience to draw from as I sought to unravel my own internal mystery. I had treated scores of women who shared many of the same symptoms I was finally recognizing within myself: oversensitivity, indecisiveness, self-consciousness, lack of self-trust, inability to succeed in relationships, lack of confidence regardless of our accomplishments, and a general sense of insecurity. Some of my clients had spent unproductive years in therapy with other practitioners, or had purchased stacks of self-help books that never seemed to pinpoint what was causing their pain. My clients ranged from high-powered, successful professionals and CEOs to stay-at-home soccer moms to drug-addicted mothers on welfare to public figures. Like me, my clients had always felt that they lacked something crucial in their lives that seemed to be connected to the distorted self-image and insecurity that haunted their adult lives. I'm always second-guessing myself. I replay a conversation repeatedly, wondering how I could have handled it differently, or just to bask in my shame. Most of the time I realize there is no logical reason for me to feel embarrassed, but I still feel that way. I'm really anxious about what other people think of me. Jean, age 54. People often compliment me on my accomplishments, my master's degree in communications, my successful public relations career, the children's book I wrote, but I can't seem to allow myself the credit I probably deserve. Instead, I beat myself up for what I think I've done poorly or should have done better. I'm such a cheerleader for my friends. Why can't I be that way for myself? Evelyn, age 35. When I die, I've told my husband he can carve my tombstone with, "She tried, she tried, she tried, she tried, and then she died." Susan, age 62. After years of study and clinical work, I began to see that the debilitating symptoms I shared with so many of my female clients had their origin in a psychological problem called narcissism, specifically, our mother's narcissism. Much of what I had read regarding narcissism pertained to men, but when I looked at descriptions of it, something clicked. I realized that there are mothers who are so emotionally needy and self-absorbed that they are unable to give unconditional love and emotional support to their daughters. I saw that my clients' troubled relationships with their mothers, as well as my own relationship with mine, were clearly connected to maternal narcissism. It became clear to me that the crucial element missing in my own life and in the lives of my insecure, unfulfilled female clients was the nurturing and empathic love that we all desperately needed but didn't get from our mothers. And our mothers probably hadn't gotten it from their mothers either, which means that a painful legacy of distorted love was passed from generation to generation. The more I learned about narcissism and how it plays out in the mother-daughter relationship, the more completely I committed myself to helping instill understanding, self-trust, and self-love in the daughters of narcissistic mothers. This book is designed to explain the dynamic of maternal narcissism and to provide you with strategies to overcome it, without in any way blaming narcissistic mothers. Healing comes from understanding and love, not blame. When we can understand the barriers to love that our mothers faced, which resulted in their inability to give us love, we can begin to take steps to ensure our own well-being. Your goal is to understand and to take responsibility for yourself and to heal. In this book, you will learn to be loving toward yourself and also your mother. In the beginning stages of this process, you might feel deeply hurt, sad, angry, and even enraged. These reactions are normal, a critical step on the road to recovery. In time, you will gain more understanding of maternal narcissism. You will be able to embrace a new kind of love to replace the distorted love you received as the daughter of a narcissistic mother. Why focus on mothers and daughters? Both boys and girls suffer emotional disruptions when a narcissistic father or mother raises them. A mother, however, is her daughter's primary role model for developing as an individual, lover, wife, mother, and friend. And aspects of maternal narcissism tend to damage daughters in particularly insidious ways. Because the mother-daughter dynamic is distinctive, the daughter of a narcissistic mother faces unique struggles that her brothers don't share. A narcissistic mother sees her daughter more than her son as a reflection and extension of herself rather than as a separate person with her own identity. She puts pressure on her daughter to act and react to the world and her surroundings in the exact manner that mom would, rather than in a way that feels right for the daughter. Thus, the daughter is always scrambling to find the right way to respond to her mother in order to win her love and approval. The daughter doesn't realize that the behaviors that will please her mother are entirely arbitrary, determined only by her mother's self-seeking concern. Most damaging is that a narcissistic mother never approves of her daughter simply for being herself, which the daughter desperately needs in order to grow into a confident woman. A daughter who doesn't receive validation from her earliest relationship with her mother learns that she has no significance in the world and her efforts have no effect. She tries her hardest to make a genuine connection with mom, but fails, and thinks that the problem of rarely being able to please her mother lies within herself. This teaches the daughter that she is unworthy of love. The daughter's notion of mother-daughter love is warped. She feels she must earn a close connection by seeing to mom's needs and constantly doing what it takes to please her. Clearly, this isn't the same as feeling loved. Daughters of narcissistic mothers sense that their picture of love is distorted, but they don't know what the real picture would look like. This early learned equation of love, pleasing another with no return for herself, has far-reaching negative effects on a daughter's future romantic relationships, which we'll see in a later chapter. What is narcissism? The term narcissism comes from Greek mythology and the story of Narcissus. Narcissus was handsome, arrogant, and self-involved, and in love with his own image. He couldn't tear himself away from his reflection in a pool of water to become involved with anyone else, and ultimately his self-love consumed him. He died gazing at himself in the water. In everyday usage, a narcissist is someone who is arrogantly self-absorbed. Self-love or self-esteem, on the other hand, has come to mean a healthy appreciation and regard for oneself that does not preclude the ability to love others. The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, DSM, describes narcissism as a personality disorder classified by the 9 traits listed below. Narcissism is a spectrum disorder, which means it exists on a continuum ranging from a few narcissistic traits to the full-blown narcissistic personality disorder. The American Psychiatric Association estimates that there are approximately 1.5 million American women with narcissistic personality disorder. Even so, non-clinical narcissism is a more pervasive problem. In truth, we all have some of these traits, and those at the low end of the spectrum are perfectly normal. However, as you go further along the spectrum of narcissism, you encounter more problems. Here are the 9 traits of narcissism, including examples of how they present themselves in the mother-daughter dynamic. The narcissistic personality, 1, has a grandiose sense of self-importance, i.e. exaggerates achievements and talents, expects to be recognized as superior without commensurate achievements. Example, the mother who can talk only about herself and what she's involved in and never asks her daughter about herself. Sally hates to introduce people to her mother because her mother never stops talking about her volunteer work at Children's Hospital, giving medical descriptions as though she herself is the doctor. To hear her talk, she has saved many lives. 2 is preoccupied with fantasies of unlimited success, power, brilliance, beauty, or ideal love. Example, the mother who believes her career cleaning houses will bring her widespread recognition through the efforts of her famous clients. Mary's mother constantly talks about her important clients and how much they need her and appreciate her, and how she believes she will be hired on a movie set with one of them soon. 3. Believes that he or she is special and unique and can only be understood by or should associate with other special or high status people or institutions. Example, the mother who takes her family out to dinner and treats the wait staff like serfs in her personal kingdom. Carrie says it is embarrassing to go out to dinner as a family when her mother comes along, because she truly acts like she is the queen of the lizard lounge. 4. Requires excessive admiration. Example, the mother who demands praise, gratitude, and compliments for everything she's ever done for you. Jane's mother attends her grandson's soccer games every once in a while, but when she does, she expects Jane and her family to appreciate the fact that she sacrificed her time in order to be there. She is forever bringing up all that I do for you kids. 5. Has a sense of entitlement, i.e. unreasonable expectations of especially favorable treatment or automatic compliance with his or her expectations. Example, the mother who feels too important to stand in line. Marcy's mother liked to gamble, but when she went to casinos, she immediately got a wheelchair, though she was clearly not disabled, so that she could be pushed to the front of the line. In grocery stores, Marcy's mother would stand in the middle of the aisle and ask perfect strangers, "Could you find this for me?" 6 is interpersonally exploitative, i.e. takes advantage of others to achieve his or her own ends. Example, the mother who seeks out only friends who can help her get somewhere with her own goals in life. Sarah's mother talks about her friends in terms of what they can do for her, as opposed to their likable qualities. Her mother recently rejected a longtime friend when the friend was diagnosed with lupus. The mother was afraid her friend would need something from her. 7. Lacks empathy, is unwilling to recognize or identify with the feelings and needs of others. Example, the mother who immediately restates any story her daughter has told, pointing out the correct way to tell it. Candace cannot really speak at all in her mother's presence without being corrected, criticized, or demeaned in some way. 8. is often envious of others or believes that others are envious of her. Example: the mother who says she has no female friends because most women are jealous of me. Sue's mother believes she is gorgeous and therefore a threat to other women. She often repeats the old L'Oreal commercial in which the beautiful model proclaims, "Don't hate me because I'm beautiful." 9. Shows arrogance, haughty behaviors, or attitudes. Example: the mother who believes that her children are too good to play with other children who have fewer material luxuries. Jackie's mother allowed her to associate only with children from moneyed families because most people were not good enough for her well-heeled children. Each of these 9 traits is exhibited through behaviors that say, "It's all about me, and you're not good enough." Narcissists lack empathy and are unable to show love. They appear to have a superficial emotional life, and their world is image-oriented, concerned with how things look to others. If your mother exhibits many of the above narcissistic traits, you may usually feel that she doesn't know you because she never takes the time to focus on who you really are. We daughters of narcissistic mothers believe we have to be there for them, and that it is our role to attend to their needs, feelings, and desires, even as young girls. We don't feel that we matter to our mothers otherwise. Without empathy and love from her mother, a daughter lacks a true emotional connection and therefore feels that something is missing. Her essential emotional needs are unmet. In severe cases of maternal narcissism where neglect or abuse is involved, the most basic level of parental care is missing. In more subtle cases, daughters grow up feeling empty and bereft and don't understand why. My goal is to help you understand why you feel as you do and free you to feel better. When mothers don't bond with their daughters. As we grow through each stage of development, when our parents nurture and love us, we grow up feeling secure. Our emotional needs are being met. But when a daughter does not receive this nurturing, she grows up lacking emotional confidence and security and must figure out a way to gain these by herself. Not an easy task when she doesn't know why she always feels empty to begin with. Normally, a mother interacts with her baby and responds to her every movement, utterance, and need. She thus fosters a solid bond of trust and love. The child learns to trust her mother to provide her with physical necessities, emotional warmth, compassion, and approval, which allows her to develop self-reliance. But a mother without compassion, who fails to forge a bond with her daughter, provides for that daughter only when it is in the mother's best interest. Her daughter thus learns that she can't depend on her mother. She grows up apprehensive, worried about abandonment, expecting deceit at every turn. A striking example of the effect of maternal narcissism is exemplified in a dream told to me by my client Gail. The dream has recurred throughout her lifetime, beginning when she was a child and continuing into her adult life. I'm dancing through a summery green meadow, carpeted with delicate wild flowers and shaded with stately trees. There's a melodic brook whispering through the tall grass. In a clearing, I spy a beautiful spirited mare, a flawlessly white horse, which is grazing unperturbed by my approach. I run to her joyously, anticipating her whinny of appreciation and approval, as I offer the apple I pick from a nearby grove. She ignores me and the fruit and viciously bites my shoulder instead, then returns to her foraging with complete indifference. After reporting this dream, Gail said to me sadly, "If my own mother can't love me, who can?" Gail came to understand that the horse in the dream represented her longing for a fantasy mother, the one she wished she had, as well as her real mother, who typically turned away and did not respond to her needs for love and approval. It's a natural human feeling to long for a mother who loves everything about you, absolutely and completely. It's normal to want to lay your head on your mother's breast and feel the security and warmth of her love and compassion. To imagine her saying, "I'm here for you, baby," when you reach out for her. We all need more than the roof over our head, food to eat, and clothes to wear. We need the unconditional love of a trusted, loving parent. My 60-year-old client Betty reported that she still wishes she had a good mother, but pragmatically gave up on that a long time ago. "I used to cry myself to sleep wishing I just had that mother to love me and make me a pot of soup." Serena, a beautiful 30-year-old friend of my daughter, was chatting with me one day about her mother and also telling me about her therapy. She encapsulated the longing for maternal love in her statement, "When I'm talking to my therapist, sometimes I want to jump into her lap, curl up on the couch with her, and pretend she's the mommy I never had." The feelings expressed by Gail, Betty, and Serena typify the longing for maternal love that daughters of narcissistic mothers experience. As you learn more about maternal narcissism and how to recover from its effects, you'll gain a healthy appreciation and love for yourself and know how to fill that old emotional void. Hello, hope. Goodbye, denial. Motherhood is still idealized in our culture, which makes it especially hard for daughters of narcissistic mothers to face their past. It's difficult for most people to conceive of a mother incapable of loving and nurturing her daughter, and certainly no daughter wants to believe that of her own mother. Mother's Day is this country's most widely observed holiday, celebrating an unassailable institution. A mother is commonly envisioned as giving herself fully to her children, and our culture still expects mothers to tend to their families unconditionally and lovingly, and to maintain an enduring emotional presence in their lives, available and reliable no matter what. Even though this idealized expectation is impossible for most mothers to meet, it places mothers on a heroic pedestal that discourages criticism. It is therefore psychologically wrenching for any child or adult child to examine and discuss her mother frankly. It is especially difficult for daughters whose mothers don't conform at all to the saintly maternal archetype. Attributing any negative characteristic to mom can unsettle our internalized cultural standards. Good girls are taught to deny or ignore negative feelings, to conform to society's and their family's expectations. They're certainly discouraged from admitting to negative feelings about their own mothers. No daughter wants to believe her mother to be callous, dishonest, or selfish. I believe almost all mothers harbor good intentions toward their daughters. Unfortunately, some are incapable of translating those intentions into the kind of sensitive support that daughters need to help them through life. In an imperfect world, even a well-meaning mother can be flawed and an innocent child unintentionally harmed. Once we daughters begin to face the painful truth that maternal narcissism does indeed exist, we can start to address the disturbing emotional patterns that we have developed throughout our lives. You can courageously look at your past and heal from it by honestly facing up to these tough questions. Why do I feel unlovable? Why do I never feel good enough? Why do I feel so empty? Why do I always doubt myself? You can feel better and find a better way to live. you can understand what maternal narcissism did to you and decide to nurture yourself and feel good about who you are in spite of it. You can also prevent your own children from undergoing what you went through. Every woman deserves to feel worthy of love. It is my hope that as you come to understand how narcissistic mothers treat their daughters, and as you gain support from the stories and advice you hear, you will acquire the strength to break free from the longing for a mother you never had. Instead, you will be able to nurture and love the woman you have become. So before you proceed further, please answer the questions in the survey that follows so that you have a clearer idea of the extent of your own mother's narcissism. Even if your mother does not have all 9 traits of a fully blown narcissistic personality disorder, her narcissism has no doubt hurt you. Questionnaire. Does your mother have narcissistic traits? Mothers with only a few traits can negatively affect their daughters in insidious ways. Keep note of all those that apply to your relationship with your mother, now or in the past. 1. When you discuss your life issues with your mother, does she divert the discussion to talk about herself? 2. When you discuss your feelings with your mother, does she try to top the feelings with her own? 3. Does your mother act jealous of you? 4. Does your mother lack empathy for your feelings? 5. Does your mother support only those things you do that reflect on her as a good mother? 6. Have you consistently felt a lack of emotional closeness with your mother? 7. Have you consistently questioned whether or not your mother likes you or loves you? 8. Does your mother do things for you only when others can see? 9. When something happens in your life, accident, illness, divorce, does your mother react with how it will affect her rather than how you feel? 10. Is your mother overly conscious of what others think? Neighbors, friends, family, co-workers? 11. Does your mother deny her own feelings? 12. Does your mother blame things on you or others rather than own responsibility for her own feelings or actions? 13. Is your mother hurt easily, and does she carry a grudge for a long time without resolving the problem? 14. Do you feel you were a slave to your mother? 15. Do you feel you were responsible for your mother's ailments or sickness, headaches, stress, illness? 16. Did you have to take care of your mother's physical needs as a child? 17. Do you feel unaccepted by your mother? 18. Do you feel your mother is critical of you? 19. Do you feel helpless in the presence of your mother? 20. Are you shamed often by your mother? 21. Do you feel your mother knows the real you? 22. Does your mother act like the world should revolve around her? 23. Do you find it difficult to be a separate person from your mother? 24. Does your mother want to control your choices? 25. Does your mother swing from egotistical to depressed mood? 26. Does your mother appear phony to you? 27. Did you feel you had to take care of your mother's emotional needs as a child? 28. Do you feel manipulated in the presence of your mother? 29. Do you feel valued by your mother for what you do rather than for who you are? 30. Is your mother controlling, acting like a victim or martyr? 31. Does your mother make you act different from how you really feel? 32. Does your mother compete with you? 33. Does your mother always have to have things her way? Note, all of these questions relate to narcissistic traits. The more questions to which you answered yes, the more likely your mother has narcissistic traits, and this has caused some difficulty for you as a daughter and an adult.